We are talking today with Ben Cohen. Ben Cohen is the co-founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, which was acquired by Unilever in 2000. He also founded Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities and True Majority. He serves on the boards of Alter Eco, a fair trade food company, and Heifer International, an international development aid organization. And he is currently the head stamper at the Stamp Stampede, a movement that encourages people to legally stamp messages like not to be used for bribing politicians on U.S. currency in order to build the movement to amend the Constitution and get money out of politics. Ben, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us today.
Good to be here, Mike.
So start out, you are here in town representing the Stamp Stampede and doing some work with a local initiative, Initiative 1329. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. The Stamp Stampede, of course, is a national organization, and we encourage people all over the country to get our stamps that they can get online at stampstampede.org and stamp paper currency as a way of building the movement to get money out of politics by amending the Constitution and passing federal and state legislation. So we've got about 15,000 stampers around the country, and you know the amazing thing about stamping money is that each time you put a stamp dollar bill into circulation, 900 people see it. So if just one person stamps three or four bills a day, they'll create a million impressions over the course of a year. So it's very, very powerful. I mean, we call it monetary jujitsu, using money to get money out of politics. And it's also kind of a petition on steroids. I mean, you know, normally if you want to make your voice heard in the political process, you can sign a petition and hopefully somebody might see it sometime. But this way, you're making your point of view known, and 900 people are seeing it each time you do it. So that's quite powerful. And we got contacted by some of our stampers here in the state of Washington because they're working on getting this initiative on the ballot so that people can vote to say that, yes, they want the Constitution amended to say that corporations are not people and money is not free speech. And that would end up overturning the Supreme Court rulings that led to unlimited corporate money in politics. So it's a there's about 600 volunteers, you know, very highly engaged volunteers, and of course there's 3,000 others that have also signed on, and we're about one-third of the way to getting enough signatures to get it on the ballot, and the deadline is the end of June, so we got about a month and a half to go, and we need more people to visit the wamed.org website, WAMED.org, and sign up to be petition to signature gatherers. We're going to be at Folklife all weekend, and the amazing Amendomatic Stampmobile will be there as well.
Very good. So people can come and can they get stamps at the Amendomatic?
You can put your bill in the amazing Amendomatic machine, and we stamp it there for free. It's a free service. And you can also buy stamps at the Amendomatic machine. We sell them for a donation.
Now, printing or modifying currency is not illegal?
We like to call it decorating, adorning. No, it's not illegal. You know, it's interesting, about half the population thinks that it is, but if you read the actual law, it's very detailed about what is not legal in terms of doing something to paper currency. And it says that it's not legal to cut it, it's not legal to punch holes in it, It's not legal to totally obliterate it so that it no longer looks like currency. Of course, you can't change the denomination, and you're not allowed to advertise your business on it. But other than that, you can do it.
All right. So the can you talk more about the move for a 28th Amendment? I know there's a lot of states that are pursuing this as well.
Yeah, that's right. The movement is gathering a lot of steam. You know, since the Citizens United ruling 2 or 3 years ago, there have been 16 states that have voted in favor of this amendment, two of them by ballot initiative. That would be Montana and Colorado. And there's 150 members of Congress, senators and congressmen, that have signed on to an amendment. About 550 municipalities have voted in favor of an amendment. And just this week, it was announced that the Senate committee in charge of this will bring it out of committee and bring it to the floor of the Senate for a full vote of the Senate, which is, you know, an amazing step in the movement to amend the Constitution. It's really a giant leap forward for us. And what also happened last week? Vermont became the first state in the union to vote in favor of a constitutional convention to get money out of politics. So there just continues to be more and more pressure on Congress to do something, and that signals a lot of success for the movement.
Now, isn't Vermont the state you're out of?
Vermont is the state I'm out of. We're very proud of Vermont. Vermont also passed the first in the nation GMO labeling law.
So is it a pretty progressive state overall?
You know, it goes both ways. You know, we do happen to have an amazing Senator, Bernie Sanders, who's near as I can tell the most progressive member of the Senate. But you know, we've had Republican governors, and you know, there's both sides to Vermont.
All right. So the sticking with the 28th Amendment, so pursuing it from the state side, ideally the goal is to get 2/3 of the states signed on, is that right?
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Okay. And then the states themselves, then this goes to Congress eventually, or?
Right. We need Congress to vote in favor of an amendment. And I think it's 2/3 of Congress that needs to do that, and then maybe 3/4 of the states need to ratify it.
Right. Okay. So I'm just wondering about that in terms of with the upcoming potential Senate vote, if that would slow things down from the state pursuing it at the state level.
You know, I don't think it slows things down. I think that there'll just be more and more pressure on Congress. I mean, that's the only reason why they're having this vote, is because there's been so much pressure on them already.
Okay. So back up a little bit and talk about you are, of course, most well known for being the Ben in Ben and Jerry's ice cream. So when did social justice issues start becoming important in your life?
I think I've been concerned about social justice issues since I was in elementary school. You know, I mean, I was a really good student up until seventh grade. And so I really, really listened to the stuff they teach you in elementary school about equality and fairness and justice and one man, one vote, and equal opportunity. And, you know, as I was growing up, I would see things that showed that that a lot of times that's not really true. You know, I grew up on Long Island, and sometimes I'd drive with my parents into New York City, and when you come over the bridge, you end up on this street that divides Harlem from Manhattan. And on one side of the street, you see poverty. You know, you see, you know, bombed out houses, and you see, you know, derelicts, and you see, you know, garbage in the streets. And on the other side, you see the most elegant, you know, living conditions you can imagine. And, you know, I would talk to my father about that and ask him why that is. And he'd say, well, you know, they get less taxes from one side, and they don't, you know, people on one side don't vote that much, so they don't give them such good city services. And, you know, and then, you know, and then the civil rights movement happened, and, you know, I wanted to be going down south with the Freedom Riders. My parents wouldn't let me go.
So how did you incorporate that into your company, your ice cream company?
You know, originally it was not supposed to become a big business. It was supposed to be just a little homemade ice cream shop, and that's what we were going to do, and we were going to... Our plan was to do it for a few years and make $20,000 a year each, and then maybe after that we would become cross country truck drivers. And you know, because we ended up opening in Vermont, which is incredibly cold, when it came winter time, we couldn't really sell any ice cream, and so we started selling tubs of 2.5 gallon bulk containers to restaurants, and that kind of got us into the wholesale business. And then, you know, it turned out that when we finally were selling more than I could fit in the back of my VW Squareback, we got this old antique ice cream truck with 250,000 miles on it, and it kept on breaking down, and the cost to repair it were more than we were taking in, and we were about to go out of business. And in a last-ditch effort, we started packing our ice cream in pint containers to see if we could drop it off to mom-and-pop grocery stores for them to sell it. And that's what turned the corner for the business, and the rest, of course, is ice cream history. But along the way, there came a point when, you know, the business was at a level of about $3 million, and Jerry and I looked at ourselves and we said, you know, what's going on here? We're not ice cream men anymore. We're businessmen, and we're not spending our time scooping ice cream and making ice cream anymore. We're spending our time dealing with lawyers and accountants and hiring and firing, and we're just becoming another cog in the economic machine that tends to oppress a lot of people. And our first reaction was to sell the business. And then I ran into this old eccentric restaurateur that I was getting to know, and I told him what was going on. And he said, Ben, how could you possibly sell the business? The business is your baby. It has so much incredible potential ahead of it. And I said, Maurice, you know what business does. It exploits the community. It exploits its workers. It exploits the environment. And he said, Ben, if there's something you don't like about the way business is done, why don't you just do it different? And so we decided to do that. We decided to conduct this grand experiment that actually we thought was going to fail, to use our business as a force for progressive social change. And it worked. What do you know? I mean, you know, at the beginning, you know, it was really controversial in terms of the board, and, you know, all these other business experts, professors and business schools were saying we were crazy, and that it wasn't possible, and that if you tried a you know, address social problems with your business. You're going to spend money doing that, and you're going to go out of business. And, you know, what we discovered was, you know, there's this universal law. You know, as you help others, you are helped in return. And what we discovered was, as your business helps the community supports your business. And that is based on a set of shared values, and that when you make a connection with a customer based on shared values, it's an incredibly strong connection, and it builds amazing customer loyalty. And, you know, what can I say? As you give, you receive. As you help others, you're helped in return. It works that way for businesses. It works that way for people. It would work that way for our country if our country would only start, you know, helping other countries instead of, you know, trying to suck profits out of them and focus on military might.
So, touch on a couple of things that your company did back when you were running it. Didn't you have like a pay equity within the company between what the top person made and what the...
We had a compressed salary ratio. So at the beginning, and it was modeled on the Mondragon Co-op in Spain. Originally, you know, we felt like it was outrageous that at the time, corporate CEOs were making 40 times what their line level employees were making. And so we set up a 5-to-1 salary ratio, and, you know, then eventually it moved up to a 7-to-1 ratio, and, you know, now it's no longer in effect. But whereas when we first started in business, the ratio between line level workers and CEOs was 40-to-1, it's now 400-to-1. So it's absurd.
And you had, didn't you offer like stocks that Vermonters could purchase at some point?
Yeah, that's right. When the company was at a point where it needed cash in order to get to the next level, which for us was to build our first real ice cream plant, we had, you know, all these venture capitalists that were coming to us saying, hey, you know, business is doing great. We'd like to invest in it. We'd like to help you. And we decided that we didn't want to do that, that we wanted to find a way to use this need for cash to make the community the owners of the business, so that as the business prospered, the community would automatically prosper because they own it. And, you know, of course, you know, so we consult with our accountant, we consult with our lawyer, and they tell us, you know, you're crazy. You know, you can't do that. There's never been, an in-state public stock offering in Vermont, and, you know, that Vermont doesn't have very many people. There's only 600,000 in the whole state, and them that's there don't really have much money. And so you should take the money from the venture capitalists because, you know, once they're invested in your company, if you need more money, you can go to them and they'll give you more. And we said, well, we don't care. We don't want to do it that way. And I ended up, you know, so the lawyer wouldn't do anything. I ended up having to go to the state commissioner of banking and insurance who regulated stock sales by companies. And I told him what we were trying to do. And he said, well, it's never been done before, but there is this little section in the law here that, you know, does make it possible for a company to sell shares, a large amount of shares, within the state of Vermont, as long as you don't go over state lines, you know, because then it would be the SEC. So we said, yeah, all right. And so Jerry and I registered as stockbrokers, and We did a road show around the state of Vermont, showing up at hotel meeting rooms and giving a little dog and pony show about what we were looking to do with our money. And the big thing was that we deliberately had a very low minimum buy of $126 so that people from virtually all economic strata would be able to participate. You know, this was essentially an IPO, and it's usually only limited to sophisticated investors that have, you know, like a minimum of $5,000 or something like that. And, and the accountants and lawyers were telling us that, you know, you're crazy for doing that, you know, that it's going to cost you so much money to service these guys, whatever, whatever. So anyhow, at the end of the offering, we sold it out, and one out of every 100 Vermont families became an owner in Ben & Jerry's.
And do they still have some degree of ownership now that Unilever's in charge of the company?
No, they don't have any. They don't have any ownership, but they have a bunch of money.
Yeah, okay. So when did you start forming other organizations outside of your company then, like True Majority? How did that come about?
Well, after the sale, I started an organization called Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities that was became a group of 600 business leaders that were using their credibility and expertise to make the case that, you know, now that the Cold War was over, you know, the Cold War only ended 10 years before at the time, we're continuing to buy Cold War era weapons, and they're not needed anymore, and we could shift that money into social needs at no additional cost to the taxpayer. And that organization was in business, you know, its purpose was to make that point and try to influence national policy. And so as a part of that, you know, it was during that time that the internet came into being, and we realized that, yeah, we were trying as business leaders to get this message out there, but it would really help if there was constituent pressure on politicians. And so we formed True Majority as a way for regular people to, you know, get in touch with their politicians and talk about what they wanted.
And so when I get an email from you through True Majority, is that one that you're actually initiating?
Not really. You know, True Majority merged with U.S. Action, which was a pre-existing citizen action organization that needed an online component, and so now it works mostly through U.S. Action.
So, and of late, the it looks like one of your latest endeavors is the People Power Initiatives.
Well, People Power Initiatives is the parent organization for the Stamp Stampede. So People Power Initiatives is really just a legal entity, and the actual initiative, the work that we do, is the Stamp Stampede, which is stampstampede.org, and you can go to that and you can buy a stamp online. It's a nonprofit organization, and you know, just because, Mike, you are such an incredible guy, and that I'm having such a good time here, I would like to give to your listeners my personal discount code, which is BC25. So you can, if you go online to get a stamp, you can enter my discount code BC25, and you get 50% off. So, you know, it's a good deal. And, you know, stamping money is incredibly effective, and it's kind of fun, and you can do it wherever you feel like doing it, whenever you feel like doing it, with whoever you feel like doing it with, alone or at home or in a bar or a coffee shop, restaurant. It's, It's a beautiful thing.
One of the terms we hear people responding to with Citizens United saying, no, money is not free speech, but in a way, what you guys are doing with stamping the money and recirculating it, in this particular vein, I think it actually becomes true that then these dollar bills, money becomes free speech.
Right. We're turning money into media and using money to get money out of politics. You know, I want to show you the latest in rubber stamp technology, which is the executive model pocket stamp. It fits in your pocket, and you push this little button, and it slides out, and it's like the switchblade of rubber stamps. I can see you looking really interested. It's a really cool thing, isn't it?
Because I remember the ones that you'd have, like a special ink pad, you know,
right,
that you would open, and the ink pad would dry out.
Right.
And then you'd, like, stamp something, and it would never look that good. And
right. We have advanced.
Yes.
We have made incredible advances. The ink pad is contained on here. Let me show you how this works. Can I stamp this message on here?
Yes, you may.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to stamp it right here. I'm stamping it on this thing, not a dollar bill, and I'm going to stamp the other one as well. This is the other saying that we've got, and there they are. That's how we decorate our dollars.
Stamp money out of politics, amend the Constitution, stamp stampede, and not to be used for bribing politicians. So these are self-inkers, then.
These are self-inkers, exactly.
How many bills will I be able to ink prior to having to fill her back up with ink?
You know, the interesting thing for me is that I keep on giving these away to people, so I've never gotten to a point where it's ever run out of ink. But I tell you, there's a lot of ink in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you can buy refill inks online at our place, and it's really good.
All right, well, we are just about out of time. We're talking with Ben Cohen, of course, of Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, and also stampede.org. You are in town with the stamp, your vehicle.
The amazing Amendomatic stamp mobile. It's kind of a giant Rube Goldberg money stamping machine. It's 12 feet high by 14 foot long. It's going to be at the Northwest Folklife Festival. And we're there with Wamend. There's going to be a lot of people from Wamend at the festival, all looking to just collect your signature on the petition to get this initiative on the ballot.
Yeah, Initiative 1329, and Wamend, of course, standing for Washington Coalition to Amend the Constitution. So, all right, well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us today.
Great being here. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Again, Ben Cohen, co-founder of Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, and lead stamper at stampstampede.org.